You've done your country proud.
Never really see Lara struggle. And it's about 6 yards over the fence for Lara.
Well, I don't think he's only bowling short. I think he's bowling rubbish. He's bowling like my Auntie Annie when she'd had too much sherry to drink.
How about that? Absolutely brilliant from Shane Warne.
Brilliant Yorker. Absolutely brilliant. Malinga with six.
Yet another 50 by Sachin Tendulkar. He'll raise his bat.
There it is. 500 for Peterson, a 500 for England.
Short.
For 15 best bowling figures on this ground.
That'll get there. Joe Root has gone to 100 here at Trent Bridge.
You are listening to Sticky Wicket on URN Sport.
Yeah, hello, welcome back after Easter to the first edition of Sticky Wicket, the summer term, your cricketing podcast. On the show today, I have Joe, Turan and Laura, and we've got a lot to discuss. We've talked about the IPL, and coming up to the semi-finals and final stages, we'll be looking at the English players and how they've done in the competition so far, and whether it was right or not to bring Ben Stokes home instead of playing the final. We'll also be looking at the County Championship, which has started, and there's some games going on as we talk right now, and we'll be focusing a little bit on Notts and some of the winners and losers so far in the early stages of the season. So I'm going to start with the IPL. Have you seen much of it, guys, over Easter?
I watched a little bit of like the England players here, they got on, but it's a little bit long, the IPL. It sort of like starts in April and goes on to like late May, so you do get a bit bored of it after a while. But it's interesting to see how the English players go on. I think the ones who stood out were probably obviously Ben Stokes with more ball than bat, which is a bit unexpected. And Chris Wokes did okay. And Josh Butler did all right as well. But the others didn't do a lot. But no, it was a good watch.
Yeah, was really disappointed with Tymal Mills, actually. I thought he was going to do a lot better than he did for RCB. And I think he was one of the reasons why RCB perhaps didn't have the best tournament in comparison to previous years.
RCB have had an absolute shocker there. Yeah. And with that squad, how much of a disaster is that?
A massive... When you think that their openers, they've got Gale, AB de Villiers and Kohli in their top three, you'd expect them to be posting close to, if not over 200 every single time. And they've just... Well, I thought looking at their squad sheet that they would definitely at least be in the semi-finals, but they've just been outclassed in most of the games that they've been playing.
Yeah, so about Ben Stokes as well. I think the final's this Sunday, isn't it? And England have just been to Spain, or are in Spain at the moment, warming up for their South Africa ODI series, which starts on Wednesday. Do you think it was right for England to bring him home instead of letting him play the final stages of the IPL?
I don't think it was right. I think it's only like one or two more games. But I think once Charles has said at the start, you've got to come back by this certain date, it was good that he stuck to that rather than say to them, right, well, we'll let you have concessions, because that's when you start getting a bit dodgy with sort of players and contracts and stuff. But I don't think it was right. I think it would have been great for Ben to play another final like after West Indies, what happened against the West Indies last year. So I do think it was a shame that he missed out.
And especially with the Champions Trophy coming up, I think what brings more value to him, fielding in Spain or perhaps playing an IPL final. And imagine if England gets to the final, what experience that would have been in the IPL, and he could have really used that to help him in the Champions Trophy.
I do think, though, that it's good to see that they have been a lot more accommodating this year with the IPL, letting players go and play in it. I mean, like, they let Ben Stokes stay out there whilst England played Ireland, and a lot of the time they've maybe barred, well, not necessarily barred, but discouraged players from going and playing in the IPL in favour of the start of the county season. They are making steps, the ECB, I think, to taking limited overs cricket a bit more seriously.
So we've looked at Ben Stokes and maybe one of the success stories from an English perspective on the IPL. How do you rate Josh Butler's tournament and his winter overall? He's been a bit of a struggle for him of late.
He did. I think he made more strides in the IPL than he had done for England over the last couple of months. But he kept getting. I mean, he was opening, which is a little bit of a strange one. I think he's had one opening match for England in a 2020 against Sri Lanka. So I think he did okay. He got a lot of 20s and 30s, and I think he only had the one score of over 50. But I think it's enough for him to be feeling in good form, decent form going into the Champions Trophy, which bodes well for England.
I think with Jos Buttler as well, he's going to bat lower in the order, and all he really needs is some big hitting prowess. He's not really one to build the innings for England at the top of the order. He's going to just come in and smack it from ball one, which is what he's good at.
Yeah, and definitely, he's one of those players that all he really needs is one good innings. He can go through a dip in form, but he'll, if he comes back in the Champions Trophy, hits 100 in a match, then he'll be back to his best straight off.
So no concerns over Jos Buttler then, but what about Chris Wokes? He's been phenomenal over the last 18 months, hasn't he?
Absolutely. When you think of when he first emerged in the England side to the player that he is now, he's one of our most valuable players up there with Stokes. And with bat and ball, like, he can perform with both, which I think is so valuable. And he's coming to be one of our fastest bowlers. Obviously, you don't really, you think of like Broad and you think of Finn because of the height, that they're going to be the faster ones. But I know that when we were playing over the winter and when we were playing last summer, he was the one that was constantly like pushing. And yeah, I'm just so glad to see him do so well.
And Turan, he's had quite a decent IPL tournament, hasn't he? Held his own, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I was really impressed with his death bowling as well. I thought he got the Yorkers in very well, and especially with his action, it's very hard to hit. I think that bodes well for England in the future as well.
And finally, on the IPL, with the success of the English players this time round, do you reckon we can see even more going next time round?
Potentially, but I think there's a couple of players he won't get retained. I mean, I'm not sure what was happening with Jason Roy. I mean, he didn't seem to play at all, and then when he did play, he came in at like 6 or 7, which seems like a waste of time, because he is one of the most destructive openers, I think, in the world. I think there's a couple of them. Maybe Chris Jordan didn't play very much, played a one game right at the end. So I think there's a couple of them that might miss out on contracts next year, but if some young players stake a claim this summer for England, maybe like Liam Livingston, no, maybe not, but so that sort of player you might see then step up next year.
I think Johnny Bairstow as well, if he has a good summer for England, I think he'll be one, yeah, sure, one on the cards for numerous IPL teams.
Okay, awesome. So we've covered the IPL. Before we move on, I forgot to mention at the start, we have conducted an interview with Alison Mitchell of BBC Test Match Special. Laura, you went down to that, didn't you?
Yes.
Just going to play it for you in a minute, but how did it go, firstly?
Yeah, it was a really, really interesting evening. There were four alumni there, and Alison Mitchell was leading it. It was a really good insight into the sort of industries that you can go into and the different ways that sport can impact your career. And listening to Alison Mitchell speak, it was quite phenomenal hearing about her career, which has... It is honestly the kind of thing that when you're doing student radio, you sort of dream of if you could have half that career, you'd be quite happy. And yeah, it was just very interesting hearing them all speak and hearing the advice that they gave you. Not necessarily, like, even for the ones that you didn't necessarily want to go into their industry, just little hints about interviews and that kind of thing. It was a very interesting talk to go to.
Yeah, sounds very interesting. And now we're going to hear a little bit more from Alison Mitchell. And here is the interview we conducted with her on Monday.
So obviously it's a huge year for cricket, and it's a very busy schedule. What are you most looking forward to this year? Is it the Champions Trophy? Is it the Women's World Cup or the Ashes down under?
There is so much, isn't there? There's so much. And the thing that's sort of looming biggest on the horizon for me right now is actually the Women's World Cup. Because it's held in England and because of the huge opportunity it presents. And yes, we've hosted Champions Trophies before in England. Women's World Cup, it's been such a long time, and the place that cricket has in women's sports at the moment is a place where it's got huge potential, and this could be a really valuable launch pad. The match which I particularly want to see how it unfolds is the final at Lord's, and to see whether we can sell that out. You know, I've really been trying to push online on Twitter saying, come on people, buy tickets for the Women's World Cup final. Hopefully England will be in it, but regardless, that scene, seeing Lord's full to capacity to watch a World Cup final in women's cricket would make a huge statement about the status of the sport.
Definitely. And obviously you're a very, very successful commentator, especially for women, but if you could commentate with anybody, past or present, who would it be? I'm sorry for such a harsh question.
I hate these kind of questions because there's so many people that I love working with and have been so fortunate to work with. I mean, maybe it would be... Would you know... Yes, actually, no, it's not a difficult one to answer when I actually think about it. Can I bring someone back from the dead?
Yeah, you can.
Well, I would bring Richie Beno back because... He obviously was TV, and I've been more radio, and TV was where he was, you know, absolute gold. I had the honour of making him his cappuccino when he was commentating for Channel 4 cricket, and I was the runner. So I did sort of have a little bit of a rapport with Richie, but never able to work with him professionally in that commentary box as a commentator. So that, yes, would be my dream.
I'm really sorry I'm going to ask another really horrible question, but obviously earlier you said that one of your favourite moments that you'd commentated on was when India won the World Cup. If, you know, you could commentate on any past event in cricket, what would it be?
Gosh, yes, moments for drama and absolute intensity, and then what it meant for cricket in the aftermath. The last ball of the Edgbaston Test match of 2005. And I'm not going back too far into history, but that was such a seminal moment for sort of my generation and younger, and people who were just not really into cricket. Suddenly, that Test match and it coming down to the wire as it did, and then the catch, which we now know was a non-catch technically, was taken, and England won by 2 runs, and Brett Lee was down on his haunches and Freddie Flintoff bent down to help pick him up, and that iconic photograph was taken. I remember watching that with friends who were not into cricket, and that for me sort of said it all, that this match has got everyone watching it. And that 2005 series was just absolutely iconic, and Jim Maxwell was on commentary for that final moment, and his commentary is epic. There is such feeling and intense emotion in his voice when that last wicket is taken, and yeah, that would have been amazing to be in the commentary box for.
Obviously, you want England. Well, I hope you want England to win in the Women's World Cup and the Champions Trophy. But who do you think is going to be the winner in both of those two events?
Well, I would say with the Champions Trophy, England to make the final and play it against Australia would be an absolute crackerjack of a final, which you could say the same for the Women's World Cup as well. And then both sides, gosh, I mean, flip a coin. Although something might work in England's favour is this pay dispute going on with the Australian men at the moment, and how much that is still going to be hanging over their heads going into this Champions Trophy. Is that going to distract them? But England men are playing this brilliant brand of cricket in the one-day arena at the moment. Ben Stokes, best all-rounder in the world right now. Most, yeah, everyone, most expensive as well. He's showed his worth now, hasn't he, with that 100?
Yeah, definitely.
On the women's side as well, it's possibly a little bit more, you know, there could be a bit of a shock or upset with a team like the West Indies, who can be so sort of cavalier on their day. We've already seen with the World T20 how they can produce shocks. So they're a very exciting team. Over 50 overs, though, I would still expect teams like England and Australia to be the two that make it through to the final. But if we have a Women's World Cup final, England v Australia at Lord's, now that should sell out.
Yes, that was Alison Mitchell there from Test Match Special, talking to our very own Laura about her hopes for the Women's World Cup and how it can be a sellout summer, and the Champions Trophy as well as some slightly funnier things that you might not hear all the time on air. So thanks for that, Laura, and thanks for Alison Mitchell for giving that interview. And before the interview, we talked about the IPL, and we sort of touched on England, but now we're going to go full on in. And Laura, how do you think their preparation is going for the Champions Trophy?
I think that preparation is pretty much near perfect, really. I don't think you could ask for much better. Their squad that they've put out for the Champions Trophy is honestly, I think it's what the best limited over squad I've ever seen turned out for England. And you know, when there's like talk about Bairstow missing out, and players of that class, you just know how good a squad it is. Obviously, they played a couple of games against Ireland, and that was very, very clinical with both bat and ball, which they would have been looking for. And I think they're in good stead going into the England South Africa series. I think, yeah, preparation's been pretty much perfect. If they can come out of this 3-0, even more so. I'm not going to say that they're favourites in the Champions Trophy, because you can never really gauge who is a favourite, but I think it's, like I say, the strongest England squad I think I've seen for a while.
So, Joe, who are the certainties in that first starting 11 come the Champions Trophy?
I think the top four or five would probably be Roy Hales to open route four, Morgan. No, sorry, route three, Morgan four. Stokes 5, Butler 6. So I'm not sure there'll be a place of Bairstow. Personally, I don't know, it'd be a bit of a risk, but if it was a flat wicket and there's no need for Moen Ali's off spin, I'd replace Moen Ali with Bairstow. He'd play the extra batsman and have Joe Root as a second spinner. But I think it's really difficult not to see Bairstow in there. I mean, he's in the form of his life, and I just think they've really got to try and find a space for him, but I don't know who will come in for.
Yeah, the only area I really worry about of England is the spin department. I think Rashid, although he's done well against Ireland, it's against Ireland. Will he get found out against better teams and better opposition? And especially with the tracks that could be prepared for the Champions Trophy, like we saw last time it was in England, they prepared a lot of turning wickets. So if that's the case again, then perhaps spin could play a big part.
With spin, though, it always amazes me how Root comes on and, like, so often in his first over he'll take a wicket, and I feel like, you know, you say like, oh, if it's a bit flatter, leave Moeen Ali out and maybe just play Root out, but I think that is just definitely a viable option.
So who would your bowling attack be then, guys? Who are you going to go for? You got five picks?
I think I'd go with David Willey to start, even though he's not in particularly good form, purely because he is a left armer and he does add a bit of variation to the attack. And when he's bowling well, he does swing the new ball more than sort of anyone else in the England attack. Definitely have Mark Wood in there for the raw pace. Chris Wokes, certainty. Then you've got, I'm not sure if Plunkett misses out, it would be very harsh, but I'm not sure. I'll have to see.
Laura?
Yeah, I couldn't leave Plunkett out. He's just played so... you look at how he played in the West Indies, I just think you can't leave him out at the moment. I think he is another one that is probably the best form that he's ever been in for England. But like you say, with Wood now being fit again, it does throw a big spanner in the works. Like how they said, like the England team have been saying, it's a good headache to have, but equally, it'll be interesting to see who they do go for and... overall.
So Wokes has got to be a certainty in the squad, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. In regards to the bowling as well, I think, are you going to play Willey just to bowl five overs at the top?
Yeah, sure.
I think if you're going to play someone, he needs to have bowl all the 10 overs to a good ability. I mean, although Willey does bring you wickets at the top of the order, I think Wood can definitely do that. I think Plunkett can do that as well, equally as well.
So, as we said earlier, we've got this three-match ODI series against South Africa. How excited are we all for that? That's going to be a great series, isn't it? South Africa are right at the top of their game.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really good benchmark to see where England are at going in. If they can win all three games, that'll be... I'm not saying they're going to go win the Champions Trophy, but it'll be a big marker set down. Obviously, South Africa are a top-quality one-day side. I think they're top in the rankings. AB de Villiers is back. And yeah, it'll be a really good series. It'll be a really... attacking teams, two aggressive teams, and should be a good watch.
Yeah, a bit disappointed that Steyn got injured. I think he injured his shoulder the other week, but it'll be really interesting to see sort of Rabada, who's sort of the Steyn replacement, and how he goes in England, especially against a quality bowling attack.
It's always a great contest when South Africa come to England. I think because both of them play the conditions so well, where other teams don't necessarily, it's a very even footing, and it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top.
So, Laura, it's now your turn to answer some difficult questions.
No.
Who do you think's going to win the tournament?
Oh, God, that's an awful question. I wouldn't, and I think that if they're going to... I think it could be England. I genuinely do. I think they have an exceptionally strong squad. Obviously, there's so many teams that are so good at the moment. I mean, like you said, South Africa, but then India and Australia are also on top form, and we've got a very we've got New Zealand and Australia in our group, which is very difficult. But I think home conditions and just the strength and depth of our squad and how together the team is as well. I think that obviously with the pay thing looming over Australia, I think that is going to perhaps play a little bit of a mental game, and I think we've just got a lot of momentum at the moment, and I would like England to win, and I think they might just do it.
Okay, we've gone one England. Tiram, what are you going for?
I'm just going to say India based on tournament experience and
very
being
good
an
shout
Indian
that.
Fan.
Yeah, very good shout. And Joe?
I'm going to go with England. I think it'd be a big ask, but as I said, home conditions is massive. If the tournament's being played in India, I think, you know, they'd have an outside chance at best. But I think because it's been played in England and we've got such a good record at home over the last couple of years since obviously the New Zealand series and beyond, yeah, I think they're in with a great shot.
So it's an important tournament for all the big teams, but what about Bangladesh? They're in it. They've replaced the West Indies in the tournament, haven't they, which is massive for them. Do you reckon they could be a dark horse this time round?
You can never really rule out or underestimate Bangladesh. I mean, you have to look at how they've performed in recent tournaments. I mean, that game where they were pushing India in their own backyard, and you think, wow, like, they're no longer a banana skin in cricket, whereas like perhaps five or so years ago you'd be a bit miffed if you lost to Bangladesh. But I think they are coming into their own as a side, and I don't think that they will win. I don't think that they'll necessarily get past the group stages, but I think there's definite potential that they will be pushing teams.
I think with Bangladesh now, if you look in the past, they had one or two batsmen. Now they've got four or five batsmen like Sarkar, Rahim, Iqbal. They can all bat. So whereas before, if you've got the two big men, Al-Hassan and Iqbal, then you'd win. Now there's other people who can step up, and that's why they're a real dangerous prospect.
Yeah, they've got some dangerous bowlers as well. I think Mustafizur is a cracking young bowler. And he might be quite good in his conditions because I think he does swing the ball. They're in a really tough group, obviously, of England, New Zealand, Australia. But I think you ask any Bangladesh fan, they'd probably say, well, definitely say this is the best Bangladesh team there's ever been. And it's great to see that there's another sort of nation on the rise in international cricket.
Yeah, good point. Going from that to another more developing nations, because Bangladesh have obviously got their test match status about 25 years ago and they've worked their way up, and I think there's an important decision coming up in the next couple of months about Ireland and Afghanistan, whether they're going to get test match status. Well, Ireland did not perform very well in the one day series against England. Do you reckon that could influence the ICC?
I think it could. I hope it doesn't. I would really, really like to see Ireland and Afghanistan both be given more opportunities, because if you look at particularly someone like Ireland, they have a lot. There are a lot of good young Irish players. I mean, I support Middlesex, and quite a few good Irish players play for Middlesex. But without having those regular games and those regular tournaments, there's no incentive there. You can make a good enough career in county or pushing for the England side. So I think if the ICC want to try and help these developing nations, which they should if they want cricket to progress, then they're going to have to try and give them some form of status as a test nation, or giving them more opportunities in ODI and 2020 cricket.
Yeah, it is a worry, though, because they're playing again today. They're in the tri-series, I think, with Bangladesh and New Zealand. And they're playing again today, and they've been bowled out for 181 against Bangladesh. Mm. And they're getting absolutely pasted. Are they just low on confidence, or is this a long-term crisis now for Ireland?
I think with Ireland, they sort of missed the boat 4 or 5 years ago. That's when they had all their best players in top form. So they had Porterfield, Joyce. I mean, you've had Morgan, Rankin. And now they sort of lost that, and they lost the momentum. Perhaps if they had test cricket back then more people would be encouraged to play, and perhaps you'd see a greater succession of Irish players. Whereas now, I think we've lost that to a certain extent, which is quite disappointing.
Yeah, I think Afghanistan are probably ahead of Ireland at the moment, or definitely ahead of Ireland at the moment. They've got a couple of players who are out in the IPL. One's a very good leg spinner, a young lad, and Rashid Khan. So I think they'll definitely get test cricket. I'm not sure whether they play in India, is that right? I think they might have to play in India. Yeah. Ireland, I think I'd still would, because I think Laura's absolutely spot on in the fact that you sort of have to give country test cricket for their cricket to improve at sort of grassroots level. If you're a young lad and you're thinking, should I play cricket or Gaelic football, if you see people on TV like Irish players playing against England in a test match, you're more likely to choose cricket, I think. So it's definitely something that needs to come in.
Yeah, and so that's the end of the international talk now, and as promised, we're going on to the county game, and because we're a Nottinghamshire based radio station, we're going to take a look at Notts. And you're a Notts fan, aren't you, Laura?
Well, I'm a Middlesex fan.
You're a Middlesex fan, but
Notts is the closest ground, so we go there quite a bit.
And well, we'll touch on the county championship, because that started before the one day tournament, but we've been very, very busy, so we haven't been able to cover it. But it's been a great start for Notts, and they want an instant return to Division One, don't they?
Yeah. When you look at Notts' lineup, they last year they shouldn't have been relegated. And if you looked at them the years before that, they were always they were never in contention necessarily for the title, but they were always pushing the top group. And it just, their batting lineup was very, it just capitulated a bit last year. They are still worrying slightly in the batting lineup. I think if they do get promoted this year, they'll definitely be looking to try and find some players there, especially obviously Chris Reid is retiring at the end of the season. Because if you look at some of the games that they've already played, like you've got Luke Fletcher getting 99, and you've got James Pattinson's been doing a job for them. But yeah, I mean, obviously they're top of the group at the moment. Kent are firmly pushing them, but I think I've put my money on Notts to be promoted.
Yes.
Well, I'm not saying how much money I've put on it, but
especially as well considering they've got Pujara, the Indian number three, coming in a couple of weeks. I think that can only strengthen them, and I can't really see anyone sort of restricting them to a low score in two innings, especially with these Division Two attacks.
Gonna be very hard to beat, aren't they?
Yeah, I think the opening bowling attack they've got, with Stuart Broad and James Pattinson. I know Broad, there'll be a couple of points in the summer where he has to go and play for England. But yeah, it's a seriously good attack, and it means they don't have to score a ridiculous amount of runs in two innings to win a game. But I think Laura's right, I think they do need to probably strengthen their batting next year, and if that means having Pujara for another second half of the season, I think they might need something like that.
And staying with Division 2, Durham. It's been a tough season for them because of the 48-point deduction early season. They got a couple of points knocked off in both one-day cups as well. How tough is it going to be for them to recover from this?
Well, they're not going to recover in the current. I don't want to be harsh, but in the division, they're minus 33. So they're never going to make that back up. I personally think that the ECB have been very harsh on Durham. I mean, obviously, I understand the whole there's got to be some form of punishment, but equally, this has been crippling for them, and it has made it impossible for them to be promoted. And I think it kind of puts this like onus on them as well. It kind of I know a lot of the players were very upset about it and very angry about it, and it's at that point that you maybe start to lose players as well, and then it puts even more pressure on them as a county.
Yeah, that's just lead on from that point. They've got people like Keaton Jennings playing for them, and if Durham are knocking about Division 2 for a few years to come, he'll be looking to go elsewhere, because there is a difference between Division 1 and Division 2. And I think the ECB, if you're scoring runs in Division 2, there's always a bit of hesitancy about it. I don't think it was fair. I think if you're going to penalise them, you can't penalise them in all three competitions. If they're going to get a point deduction in the Championship, I don't think they should have got one in the fifth day of the Cup, because I noticed they missed out. Yeah. In qualifying for the quarters, because they got a 2-point deduction there, and I think it is unfair.
So moving on to Division 1, and coming to the end of the podcast, but we've got a couple more topics to discuss. We've got Division 1, and Joe, as a fellow Lancs fan, it's been a good start to the season for us, hasn't it?
It has. Unfortunately, picked up some key injuries. I think Anderson's injured today. Kyle Jarvis, he's a very good bowler, is injured as well. He's fractured his thumb. But no, Lancs had a good start. But this time last year, they were right up there as well, and they couldn't maintain it, and they literally just about stayed in the division. I don't think they're going to win the league, because again, Anderson's, if he's injured now, he's going to be going with England, off to England at some point. I think you can't look too far beyond Middlesex again. I think they're a very strong side. Hampshire, though, to be fair, they've made some. I think Kyle Abbott and Riley Rousseau are two really good signings, and they could be two signings that, you know, are defining their season in terms of maybe pushing for the title.
What about you, Turan? Who do you fancy for the title in Division 1 this season?
I think Middlesex, great squad, and yeah, definitely going to challenge again.
Laura?
Well, I'd like it to be Middlesex again. Course, they have a very strong squad, but it's very close at the moment in the county championship, and if you look at it, the past few years as well, it has been very tight at the top. So I think it will be anyone's game right down to the end of the season.
I rate Surrey's chances quite high, because they don't really lose that many players to England, and they've got such a good batting lineup. We can't get them out, as Lancs experienced twice this season. And finally, moving on to the One Day Cup. How do you reckon that's gone this season? It's already it's basically done now. We're into the knockout stage. It's been a very quick. Do you like the format change to this style?
I do quite like the format change. Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good to play it in one block. Whether it's right that only three teams qualify and one team, if team finishes at the top, gets a bye to the semis. But I suppose the argument would be, you know, there's always something to play for. Even if you've qualified for the quarters, you've got the semi-finals, a free bye to semi if you finish top. So I think it's good. I think it's good as well to see a team like Worcestershire finish top of the North Group. They're like the team that doesn't really rely on big money overseas signings. They've got a lot of young players, a lot of young English players. So it's good to see them do well. So yeah, I quite enjoyed it.
I think it is quite silly to have the three teams qualifying though. It's a quite hard format to understand as well for the new players. Like new fans, why don't you just do top four quarterfinals? Leave it at that.
I think it's all. It seems to be all to do with schedule, really, doesn't it? I agree with Joe. I do really like this new format where they've kind of done it in blocks more, because I think in the past few years where they've been doing it, you're playing a one-day match randomly in the week, and then you're playing a 2020, and then all of a sudden you're back to county championship. No player can really get settled, and especially for like young players who are looking to push into the England squad, you can end up going into a different format and completely losing your form in the other format. So I think it's nice to see, like you said, a few different teams in there. You know, obviously you've got your usual like Yorkshire and Somerset and Surrey usually all around there, but having Worcestershire push and Essex, I don't necessarily always push that well, and see Cook do really well in the 50 over format. I think he's got an automatic
North squad
qualification, hasn't he? So
to finish the show, we're going to have one final round of predictions. We're going to go with the One Day Cup. Who do you reckon's favourites for it, Joe? It's a tough question again.
It is a tough question, yeah. I'm going to say Essex. I think Essex are looking quite strong. They've always got a strong batting lineup. They've got some useful bowlers. The bowling's not necessarily that strong, but I notice they've got some young lads who are taking wickets. And then if Cook can sort of retain his form, plus you've got people like that Ryan Tender-Scott, who's always been a good player at this level, I think you can't look too far beyond them.
Essex and Ravi Bopara to take him home.
Yeah, I think it could be Essex as well. Yeah, I'm just...
Okay. Awesome. Very easy last time round. And thank you very much again for listening. Slightly extended version because we've missed a lot with the Varsity series and with it being Easter, so we've got a lot more to cover. And we'll be back next week with another podcast. And a final thank you to Alison Mitchell again for the interview she gave us on Monday.